This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Night has fallen on Arthouse Legends and something sinister lurks in the shadows. Three geeks and their guests will look on the critically acclaimed terrors of cinema and judge their worth. Settle your spine and watch your step as you trespass into
the Arthouse of Horror.
Step away from the frosted churros and join us at the Arthouse Legends podcast. This is the Movie Dude Eric, and along with me are...
Hey, this is Canton. What's up with these kids these days with their long hair and not killing?
Hey, this is Chris, and what is it with Mexicans and dying?
Oh, for anyone who doesn't know, we are discussing The Book of Life, starring Diego Luna, Zoe Saldana, Channing Tatum, Ron Perlman, Christina Applegate, Ice Cube, Kate Del Castillo, Hector Elizondo, Danny Trejo, and directed by Jorge R. Gutierrez. Well, welcome to our Halloween special episode. Happy Halloween to everybody who is listening to it on the day. For anyone who isn't, happy Dia de los Muertos. If you're listening to it on the day after release, or happy podcast day if for any other day of the year. But, gentlemen, I have to ask, were you made aware of this movie prior to this episode? Have you seen this movie before we decided to do this for our Halloween episode?
I had not seen it. I knew about it, but I hadn't, it wasn't high on my list of stuff I had to get to.
Yeah. And what about you, Chris?
I had seen it one time before. It was... prior on the time it hit DVD, but so this is my second time seeing it.
Yeah, and I believe it or not, I actually went to this movie in the theater. I was actually quite interested about this because, well, let's put it out there. There's not many movies that deal with this particular holiday, which technically isn't Halloween. It's actually the day after Halloween. It's the Day of the Dead. It's a Mexican kind of celebration. But it's one that I feel is tied pretty closely to Halloween, and I was really interested in seeing this kind of brought to the screen, especially in an animated film produced by, well, one of the biggest geek names out there, which is Guillermo del Toro. So, I guess for me is, what do you know about Dia de los Muertos? What is your familiarity with this, and what do you know about this coming prior to this movie?
Just that it's the Day of the Dead, and it's the day in Mexican tradition where they go respect their dead ancestors. Typically with sugar skulls and lots of sweets. Mm-hmm. So...
But for me, and I'm going to assume you, Chris, as well, being from Texas... Dia de los Muertos is a kind of a big thing. It's not super huge like it is in Mexico and in Latin countries, but it definitely has an influence around here. And I was made aware of this holiday from grade school, and it was one of those very interesting ones. It kind of creeped me out, to be honest. It actually creeped me out a little bit more than Halloween itself, because the idea of spending basically an entire day in a cemetery, honoring past loved ones, with food and booze and other gifts to the dead. I don't know, just kind of had a kind of a creepy factor to it. But did you have any of that, any of that awareness, Chris, in from your past?
Not really. Like, I mean, I'm vaguely familiar with it. Like, I recognize the name and know, like, basic stuff about it, but otherwise it's very... I don't know the specifics, really, so...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was what kind of drew me into this particular movie. And also because, well, I don't know, just the whole idea that behind this movie was kind of classic. It's something that we kind of timeless in a cinematic element, kind of in a animation. And, well, you know, I'm also kind of a big fan of Diego Luna, and Zoe Saldana is kind of a big thing. You know, at this particular point, she'd already been in Star Trek, and she'd kind of, you know, I believe Avatar was, you know, 5 years in her past. So that was a big draw, right? I mean, that's what drew you to this as well, right, Kent?
Everything about the cast kind of draws you in, but we'll cover the full cast later, because oh my god, yeah.
Oh, we will.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I am very happy about this, and bear in mind that when I saw this in theaters, I wasn't aware of all the people in this movie. I just knew about the big ones that were on the on the trailers. So listening to this, and hey, is that Hector Elizondo? Hey, is that guy?
Yeah, is that guy? Yeah, I mean every actor.
And, yeah, I mean for me it was Danny Trejo. I was like, that sounds awfully like Danny Trejo. Is Danny Trejo in this movie?
Yeah,
because, you know.
So you sat there during the end credits, going, "Oh wow."
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, with Danny Trejo, it's like, every time I hear him, he's usually in something really bad, you know, like a man's man movie. You know, it's like, when you see him in Spy Kids, like, what the fuck are you doing in Spy Kids? Like, and playing the same character that you go in, like, crushing men's skulls, like, 10 years later, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because that the machete of Spy Kids is the machete of Machete.
Oh, yeah. No, Uncle Machete.
That just seems so wrong, you know? Oh, shit. Anyway, we're not talking about Spy Kids. We're talking about the Book of Life.
Yes.
So, but, okay, so let's go ahead and let's talk about this movie. Now, Kent, please tell me that you know kind of the framing reference, the framing scenario that this movie is using. This should be pretty obvious what this movie is modeling itself all on, right? Let's put it this way. You have a story being told to children.
Right.
That is,
once upon a time, there was this. Yeah.
Yes. And throughout the telling of the story, we go back to the children and they make snarky comments. Does that sound awfully familiar? Particularly about a bride that may or may not be discussed on in a future episode that may have been a princess?
Oh, okay. Well, as you wish. I'll just mouth shut about that. I'm thinking there's some... I was like, which movie are you going for on that? Because I know I've seen other stories like that where they... That is a...
Is this a kissing
common
book?
Framework, yeah.
Because this definitely feels like a kissing
book. I didn't get that impression, but now you mention it. Well, maybe it's because it's multiple kids and not just one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I didn't quite get it. Yeah. But yeah.
So, but I guess for me, another thing that I absolutely love about kind of the presentation and the framing of this is that when we get into the storytelling, it's done with puppets. We're actually watching the story being played out with puppet characters, right? You know, puppets that are moving on their own. What do you take of this? Because, you know, like with if we look at The Princess Bride, we're seeing actors kind of portraying what I'm going to assume is, you know, Kevin's imagination, what he sees as his grandfather's telling the story, right?
Right.
And the way that this movie does it is that because the framing story is these kids are going to a museum is getting a tour guide played by Christina Applegate, who is going to tell this particularly fantastic legend, right?
Right.
And what she does is, before she tells the story, is that she introduces puppets that are going to play large parts in what is going to happen with the story. So I'm assuming that, as she saw in the story, she's moving the puppets along, and that what we're doing is we're watching the children's impersonation of the events as she's playing with the puppets. Do you get that? Or
yeah,
pretty much.
Which
is that kind of how you? But what do you take of that particular type of
story
detail? Does that kind of take away from the story? Does it add anything?
No, it adds. For me, it's adding. So I have to admit, early on, there were a few scenes where I was like, are they using stop motion? No, wait, they're just animating as if they were figures going. It's like, yeah. Because I could see that's a traditional style of puppet, too, for Latin America, right? Because I'm not as familiar with the various forms of puppet, so I'm assuming that's true to style.
Well, I don't know if it's a Mexican puppet or not. It might just be. But one thing that I do appreciate about the look of the puppets is that there is definitely a Mexican influence in the look of the puppets themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Because especially if you look at the faces, they have these kind of carvings that have these types of swirls and this kind of very Spanish, very Latino kind of influence to the look of these particular puppets, right?
Yeah.
Although it's interesting when we get into the actual characters themselves, where the movie decides to kind of internationalize it a little bit, if you want to call it that. I don't know. That's kind of being really polite to the movie.
Mm.
I get the sense that there's a producer like, oh, we need bigger names. We can't just have these. We have to have Channing Tatum, which...
We'll get to there.
But what do you think of all this, Chris? What do you think of the style of the character designs, especially in regards to the puppets?
I mean, that was my biggest issue. I think the first time I watched it was I did not like the look of the film. I didn't like the character designs. I mean, I'm big on animation, so that's a big deal for me, is to like enjoy the character designs and enjoy the way the film looks. And I mean, there are parts of Book of Life that I do enjoy visually, but just like the first half of the movie, it's hard for me to get through that. And most of that is based on the look, really. So
What about the character designs? Did you have a problem with? Is it the shapes? Is it the carvings? The thing? What
it's aspect? I'm not really thinking of the puppets, I guess. I'm more thinking of the actual kids that are listening to the story. And they're just very ugly to me. The shapes of their bodies and it's hard to explain.
Seem too cartoonish compared to the storybook.
See, saying cartoonish is insulting to me, because I mean I love cartoons, so I don't want to use it.
Yeah,
it's like,
but I mean,
you know, but I mean at the same time, it's like cartoonish is the perfect way to describe that. So
yeah.
All right. Well, I guess let's start off with let's bring up the fact that this film is directed by Jorge R. Gutierrez, who actually had worked on television for Nickelodeon. In fact, this is kind of not exactly a part of the television show that he created, but from what I understand, it does have some of the characters from that particular show. I'm trying to bring up the
name of the show
itself. The thing is that you can definitely sense that there is a bit of a TV element, especially early 2010s television. You can definitely get those particular vibes. I think for me, the one that I can definitely sense and kind of cringe at a little bit is Fanboy and Chum Chum. I don't know if you've ever saw that show.
No.
Some of the animation, some of the character designs do kind of have that. Although to me, I don't know. I guess for me, it's like because especially if you're looking at the kids are intentionally supposed to look kind of
shit.
Rudimentary. Oh. I get the sense that that's really kind of the way that they design those kids to be, because again, we're supposed to be annoyed by them. The whole point is that we're going to take these ugly American kids, these culturally insensitive children, And through this story, they're going to get a deeper appreciation for Mexico and Mexican lore than they had before they showed up. Again, this is kind of the Kevin situation with the Princess Bride. You know, he's supposed to be a little obnoxious at the beginning, and by the end of the story, he's supposed to kind of go through a transition, a bit of an awakening of sorts, right? And these kids are kind of doing the same thing throughout it. They start off kind of obnoxious and rude and not caring, and through the story, as they go along, they start to kind of associate with the story. They get invested, and by the end of it, they have learned something. They're still kind of obnoxious, and they still make some pretty inflammatory jokes, as brought up earlier. But yeah, and the show that was involved was El Tigre: The Adventures of Manny Rivera.
Okay.
The name of the show.
Oh, okay.
Which I think came on Nickelodeon, if I'm not correct.
Okay.
Because it's a 20th Century Fox joint, I doubt that they would allow this to be a direct sequel or have any kind of association with that show.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Paramount.
But oddly, characters look identical to other characters, so.
Yeah. It's not the first time that we've seen it, and it won't be the last, but it's close enough.
Mm.
But I guess, so. Now that we have our framing model, and most of the story, you know, Chris, you mentioned that you didn't like the look of the kid. The kids only make up, I want to say, maybe about 10 minutes of this 90-minute movie.
Right, yeah.
So when we go into the fairy tale, the lore, I guess we'll call it lore for this movie, what do you think of those models? What do you think of that? If we were to just cut out the modern-day stuff, if we're just staying with the story that was being told. Would that have changed your opinion of the character models?
I kind of dislike the movie outside of The Land of the Remembered. So, yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out what is it that really kind of annoyed you? What elements just kind of didn't work for you?
It's hard to explain because it just kind of, other than it like looking ugly to me, like the only other thing I can like put my finger on is that it was kind of boring. It just seemed very meh. But like,
so you weren't impressed with the action sequences, the montages? Did it have anything to do with the animation style? Did you have a problem with that?
I mean, I guess I didn't care for it until they got to the book of the Land of the Remembered. But, like, I didn't like the cover songs. I didn't like at all.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I liked most of them, but...
The originals were fine.
Oh, you hated all of them?
The original songs were fine. But, like, the covers, I thought were horrible.
Well, one thing I like about the fact that they had the cover songs is that it reinforces the fact that this is how the kids are seeing the story. So they're not going to pull from, you know, they're not going to pull from from just fantasy songs. They're going to kind of put their own spin on it. So you'll have Mumford and Sons, or you'll have you'll have Creep somewhere and all that. Although
okay, that one was weird.
It's the goth. That's the goth one that got that.
Well, I mean, that's fine.
The only one that...
Yeah, I mean, I like Radiohead. Yeah. I like some of these bands. I didn't like the covers. I thought they were bad. So... Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, what did you think of the use of Ecstasy of Gold for... Or the remix of Ecstasy of Gold for the bullfight? Okay, you know we talked about that song with Good and the Bad and the Ugly. So... did you have a problem with that remix?
I don't think so. I don't want to say, because I'm going to get the what reaction, but I haven't seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. So.
Own the what.
Oh.
See?
Own it.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're gonna be the only one out, feel free to stay in that ground and go, yeah, I don't like it, so what? just own it.
Okay.
I mean, I've had to do it myself a few times. I've been called all kinds of names. Mm-hmm. If you want to know, you can go back to those episodes. I've been cursed more than a few times, and it may or may not have led to me not getting certain wedding invitations, so to say. But wow. Yeah.
Over a movie?
But all
there are people very fanatical about a certain story about Christmas.
I mean, that's fine.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But all the same, though, for me, I can understand why people would find the animation style clunky. I can understand why the character designs can be a little jarring. But to me, that gives if it looked like something standard, something traditional, even the quote unquote real world sequences, that they look more generic. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't like this movie. I think that these types of director and filmmaker choices, that to me at least, it gives it a little bit more life, a little bit more character. It feels unique in its own universe. And on top of that, yeah, I can kind of understand why the covers probably would be a little annoying. But I also like the fact that it sticks with the mariachi, the mariachi elements to it. And I always love hearing covers of songs from a different genre or a different play style, which is also one of the reasons why I love Weird Al polka covers.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah,
like hardcore. I love that shit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I kind of found that a little endearing. But let's go ahead and let's get into the story itself, because basically this is kind of a timeless tale. You know, we have a love triangle between two boys and a girl. Right, and we see it from the early sets, you know, while they're children, and in fact, this is played upon by the gods of all people.
Well, the gods of the dead, which is really weird, but it's not the whole pantheon,
So we got ourselves La Muerta, who is the goddess of death, and Zababa.
Said it five times fast.
A lot like a certain Star Wars character.
Zababa Fett.
No. Zababa. Zababa and Zababa.
Okay, I want to see somebody cosplay that next year. Okay, there we go.
Okay, I'll tell you right now. I love the look of Zababa. That is an awesome character design. The only thing I'm going to say bad about Zababa is, with a character design that awesome, he should have been the main villain, right? You want to see someone fight Zababa, right? That's just awesome.
He's awesome looking, and then he's voiced by fucking Ron Perlman, so I mean, yeah. I would have liked to see more of him. So yeah, he was awesome.
You just want to see Zababa get off the chain and just go all, you know, bad. Mm-hmm. And you know, break bad all, you know. Well, I'm sorry, wrong AMC show.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what? But yeah, well, I think that's kind of the joy of the two divine underworld types, is they don't really, they like to do everything behind the scenes. They don't like jump right in and go, let me punch someone or anything. They're very, oh, did I do that? Kind of.
No, that's not their problem. The problem is that they have a serious gambling problem.
Yes, that too.
Okay, let's just put it there. This movie is basically set upon the fact that we have two compulsive gamblers who really don't have anything better to do than to mess with three children and, in effect, also the fate of an entire town.
Well, it is the center of the universe.
Well, no, Mexico is the center of the universe. San Angel is the...
Kind of close to the center. It's kind of close to the center of Mexico, if you look at that map as you're zooming out.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I don't think that they're looking like at the pinpoint of Mexico and the pinpoint of San Angel. It's a town. Ah. And these two gods have decided that... depending on which one of the boys marries the girl, doesn't matter if the girl wants either one, apparently, one will get to be get to rule the really awesome side of the underworld, and the other one's going to get the shitty side. Right? That's how it pretty much goes, right? They're both not really changing anything but living quarters.
It in some ways it sounds like a weird Greek comedy.
No, it feels
of ancient
like
Greek ancient Greek comedy of errors. So,
no, to me, it feels like the punchline to Trading Places a little bit here.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm not going to spoil that because I have a feeling we're at some point going to do Trading Places. But yeah, it's but that does kind of like suck a little bit. That's kind of my problem with the whole Job element of the Bible. And to kind of see this played out in this particular lore is a little frustrating, right? But at the same time, though, this is also lore. The whole idea of this is that it's not actually happening, that this is a myth that we're seeing. And the movie doesn't even try to say that this is something that actually happened, although we can talk about the final scene in just a little bit. But what do you take of the frame or kind of the story itself? Do you find yourself interested in seeing where this particular triangle leads? Do you find yourself siding with one over the other, or how the movie kind of sets you to side with one or the other?
Well, it feels like I'm already on Manolo's side pretty easily.
You mean Manolo?
Manolo, yeah. I can't pronounce names, come on. and I'm not
a really awesome shoe, okay?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Even though I'm half tempted to say, Maria, just go pick neither one of them.
Go with the pig. Just go be yourself. Go with the pig, man. It's fine.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, boy. That's going to be on your tombstone. I'm just telling you that right now.
Go with the pig.
Just go with the pig.
I love the fact that it does kind of set it up that she might actually not choose either one from the beginning, which I think is kind of cool. And if it did actually kind of go that direction, I think I would be perfectly fine with that choice. But at the same time, though, I do kind of like that it kind of sets up and frames where these two boys are going to go, that Manolo is a son of a bullfighter, and he is, you know, that he has a love for music. Joaquin, whose father was a great warrior who had died, and that he is looking, he's kind of sought to take up that mantle, right? He's going to, that he has something to prove. The movie sets up the motivations for the two boys pretty well, and for Maria, I think that it doesn't. Let's just put it that way. She's kind of set up as the prize a little bit, although later on they will kind of give her they'll give her a little bit more voice, and she won't easily choose one or the other. Although, do you see that as a character positive, or do you see that as basically just trying to add suspense, just needless suspense for suspense sake?
I don't know. I kind of get the feeling she was always on for Manolo from the very beginning, almost, and just went, no, you're going to fight to get me just to prove to make sure I'm right.
Well, no, she her desire's for Manolo, and they make it clear that on desire-wise, Manolo wins hands down.
Yeah.
But the bet isn't about her desiring one or the
other. Oh, yeah, it's who she ends up with.
Marrying. It's not her. You know, we could have ourselves a notebook situation where, all right, do I pick the one that my mother wants or the one that I want? You know, in the movie, I think wisely, instead of having her kind of not being able to choose between one or the other, they make it very clear that her heart desires Manolo. Her obligation to her town and to her family is wanting her to side with Joaquin. And that is really her conflict in that particular realm. Now, this is a children's movie, and I think that's one of the problems that I have with the movie, is that it basically decides that it is going to be a children's movie. It's not really going to push it further than that. Because I think it would have been great if she would have been able to go, you know, do I have to choose either one? Why don't I just may either, you know, kind of do something, you know, choose someone else, or not choose either, you know, just to be, you know, to stay independent and stay single. And I will say this right now, if they would have gone that particular direction, I would have been probably just as happy with where the movie goes.
What if she chose a girl instead?
Too soon for that.
I have a strange feeling that...
It wouldn't go well with most families, I think.
No, the problem is there isn't another female character well enough developed for
right?
that.
Yeah, I was thinking of that.
Yeah.
That's why I said the pig.
Unless
the pig.
You count Grandma. You know.
No, no, we're not going to count Grandma, even though Grandma kicked ass. But
knitting?
She didn't kick ass. I mean, cholesterol killed her. I mean,
well, yeah.
Okay, but which is, by the way, one of the funnier jokes in the movie. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, I really do kind of like how the gods kind of arbitrarily decide one of the two boys. And I love how the two boys are, they meet that challenge. With Manolo, he selflessly gives. And that's where he gets the favor. Or I guess she's already decided at that point that she's choosing Manolo. But, you know, but it seems to affirm her choice in him by his selflessness. Whereas with Joaquin, he doesn't selflessly give, but at the same time, though, he shows that he is willing to be firm by requiring something so that he's not going to just simply give up. He is wanting something more, and that he gets Zalbaba's favor by being a hard bargainer, right? So they have two different styles. It's not that they're doing the same thing with both. That both gods require different, or that the two gods require different things for their favor. And I kind of like that. What I do have a bit of a problem with is we have ourselves a situation where accents dictate kind of behavior. Because I don't know if you noticed this, with the exception of one particular character, if you have a south of the border accent,
you're
more than likely going to be a good person.
No.
I mean, look, Zoe Saldana, she throws a heavier accent.
True.
Manolo has a heavy accent. All of the villagers have a heavier accent. But yet Joaquin is a person that we're not supposed to side with. He has an American accent. She mentioned Channing Tatum. Zalbaba is obviously a conniver and
right.
and a very unlikable character. I don't know if you want to call him unlikable, but he's definitely a shadier character. Ron Perlman, American accent. Ice Cube is the only one that's different.
I was going to ask.
in this, although at the same time he doesn't really choose sides. I guess he kind of sides with Manolo a little bit, but not by a whole lot. And then of course we have the general, the guy who's the bandit king that is going to come and destroy the town. Do I smell a little Magnificent Seven Samurai in all this? Just a little bit, just a teeny bit, just a little bit. Maybe just me.
I was trying to think of other things, yeah, but you're like, Seven Samurai. Yeah, except there's only a few guys defending the town, but, Mm-hmm.
I just really
like the character design on the bandits, so
I'll say this: when we get to Chato, the bandit king, he's a cyborg, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay, this is good for the 1% of the audience that can actually follow me on this for a second. He looks like a the bandits look like Warhammer 40K orcs. Except they're not green, but they feel that way. The leader is just a more massive version who has this one focus going, and all the followers are right there. It feels like a horde.
I take them as green minions with hats.
You just described orcs. Okay, so...
Chato, though, I mean... He has more gadgets than Inspector fucking Gadget, right?
I was going to say, I thought he was related to Inspector Gadget, so...
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you know, he's got the swinging arms, you know, he's got the extensions, he's got the booster legs so that he can, like, launch himself into the air.
With all that shit, it's, like, better than Iron Man's arsenal. Why does he need the fucking metal? You know?
Because he can live forever.
Oh, but he's already half robot.
He's more machine than man now, twisted and evil.
Okay, we're getting off of the Disney train a little bit here.
Yeah.
This is not a Disney movie.
But seriously, yeah, he is a cyborg. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think it's very interesting because okay, so he's after the metal, right? Mm. He's That's it's his precious if we're going to go to another franchise.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, I'm wondering, did Zelbaba take the medal from Chato? Because it seems to me that he might have, because he must have known about its existence, so he must have been aware of it, and that he's been looking for it, so it must have been that he had kind of already knew where it was, which means that Zelbaba had taken it or reacquired it. So at that particular point, couldn't Zelbaba just take it again? I mean, if he can just take things, right?
Couldn't he have just lost it, though? Least... I mean...
Could have lost.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I'm wondering, because the thing is that up to this point, he has been just destroying the countryside. Mm-hmm. So he's been unstoppable.
Right.
Now, we know that the medal that Zelbaba gives Joaquin does give you, or it gives you invulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel pain. You don't...
you don't get injured.
Invincible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... The way I take it is that Zelbaba, that perhaps either Zelbaba had already worked with Chato before, and that he gave this to Chato and then took it back to give it to Joaquin so he can win this bet, or that Zelbaba can just take it whenever he wants. You know, he can just come in, take and give, and mess with the world however he wants. Now, we know that he likes doing this shit.
Yeah.
Because La Muerta just keeps... getting on him. Also, what did you take about this relationship between La Muerta and Zelbaba? This kind of love-hate romantic relationship that they have throughout the movie.
What I want to say isn't very G or PG rated, so...
Well, you've already dropped an F-bomb.
Well,
I just wanted them to fucking get out of the way, you know, so... Yeah,
I think they've been doing that.
If they did it again, they could like keep it away from our eyeballs.
They could be exes that are just friends now.
Friends with benefits.
Well, no, because they keep coming back. I mean, like,
yeah,
they had a thing and then they didn't have a thing. And he made her mad and she's back. This is, I mean, when you talked about the Roman gods and the Greek gods. This is a thing that was with them as well.
You know,
Zeus and Hera, you know, both loved and hated each other. It's that conflict between men and women. And this is definitely a movie about the conflict between men and women, specifically, right? Maria could choose between the warrior or the poet. You know,
yeah.
that's the main conflict here. The Zelbaba and La Muerta... hold the fate of all the dead, and they argue and fight like a couple would, and because they can't die, they're stuck with each other. So it's kind of like, do you kiss and make up, or are you gonna hold it for a few millennia? You know, it's one of those things, and we see, you know, how the passing of loved ones does have an impact. You know, you could say that Manola's dad. The reason why he was so hard on his son was because of the fact that his wife had died, and he has nothing else but that to kind of keep him going. You know, he put all of his passions into a son. Joaquin is missing a father and supposedly a mother as well, and so he's also kind of driven by those losses. Death plays a large part in kind of how it impacts the living, right? Or at least that's kind of the way that the movie is setting itself. Do you kind of get that from the movie?
Well, it is all about the land of it is all about how life reflects on death and death on life is everything.
So when we get to the underground, to the underworld itself...
Party Central. Really, though, remember it is Party Central.
Well, okay, now, Chris, since it seems to me that you really enjoyed the look and the feel of the underground, the underworld elements, what about this really stood out for you in comparison to the earlier stuff?
Just thought it was so much more like visually appealing than everything else. I mean, I guess it's supposed to be that way because it's... I mean, they're partying and it's like fun all the time and shit, which seems weird since they're all fucking dead. But I don't know. I feel like it would have been. I didn't get to see it on Blu-ray, but I'm assuming on Blu-ray, that sequence is probably pretty vibrant and awesome, and I love that kind of shit when I'm watching.
Well, I mean, it was that way in the theater. I love the stylistic view look of this film. I love how it works. There's a few things that there are some retcon or some continuity issues that I have with the film. Specifically, they mentioned that if all your family die, you all get forgotten, and you're all sent to the really bad place in the underworld, right? The problem is that at the final conflict, all of Manolo's family is dead before he has the final confrontation with Chato, right? Mm-hmm. He comes back to the overworld. And shouldn't that mean that his entire family is now forgotten? I mean, before the final conflict?
Couldn't the other town members remember his family though?
That's
what I kind of thought.
That's what I was thinking.
It isn't just about remembering; it's about honoring. Again, the whole idea is it has to be family.
Oh,
that's the whole point of Dia de los Muertos, is that the family has to come together and remember and honor the honor. Now, it could be that there might be other rules that weren't established. Again, this is moving really fast, and this is happening on the Day of the Dead.
Right.
And they do kind of make a mention that there are some rules that can be bent, although I feel like this is not bent, this is breaking, perhaps, just a little bit. But, maybe there's a 24-hour grace period that you have for this kind of shit, but...
Oh, convenience.
Say what you will.
Yeah. Could be a year between. Mm. You're on the Day of the Dead, you honor them, it's a year later... You honor them again. A year later, you don't honor them. They're forgotten and gone.
And we should mention why it is that Manolo is dead. Because Zubaba had tricked him by... Okay, I have a...
Romeo and Juliet school... It's the Romeo and Juliet school of... Just don't kill yourself if you find your loved one dead. Because they may not be.
A bunch of horse shit, man. Sorry.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, you're bringing up Romeo and Juliet, but I was getting Princess Bride again, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, when we get to Ice Cube, and I'm just going to call him Ice Cube because...
Only mostly
it's
dead.
Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was mostly dead. That was the Billy Crystal moment in the movie. And while the Billy Crystal moment is fun and funny, to me, this just because we already had the Billy Crystal moment by this time the movie came out, it's just it doesn't work as well as the Billy Crystal moment. Right, it feels like a cheap get out of jail free card, just a little bit, right? Just so we can move on to the next moment in the movie. Do you kind of get that?
I kind of get the fairy tale issue,
But Kent, what about you? What did you think about the underground stuff, especially the Remember Town, because. We have that, and then we're going to get the Disremembered, the graveyard, I guess we'll call it. But what did you think of that?
It was Party Central for the Dead. So, no worries, just as long as you're remembered on the Land of the Living, you get to party with everybody else that's ever been around that gets remembered. And
all
it's...
you can eat churros!
Which makes you wonder, why do they need to eat? I mean, they shouldn't need to, and...
It's not a need thing, it's, frosted churros. You're not going to let it go to waste. Come on.
Hey, as long as they're not frosted
you don't
like
have
those ones...
churros. No frosted churros. Those are not frosting. That is not frosting. Remember? Bird?
That true.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure the good ones... are okay, but...
The good frosting?
Well, only the best go to the underground. Just saying.
Yeah.
Alright, so let's talk about the three challenges to get to Ice Cube. Because I'm pretty sure, Chris, this is probably your favorite scene, right? It sounds like
which scene?
This kind of visual elements, the kind of the way that this looks... kind of was in your wheelhouse a little bit.
The candle maker stuff?
Yeah, the balls and the maze, the not the elevator, but the...
Yeah, I thought the with how much partying there and like how well developed like the Land of the Remembered was, I was kind of disappointed in the Land of Forgotten. It was just kind of like, oh, they turned to dust and that's it. It's like, yeah. Oh.
Well, okay. What about the challenges to the Candlemaker though? The climbing.
Yeah,
the...
I was into that.
Yeah.
But although to me it's like, okay, so you're telling me that you're going to challenge a bullfighter by testing his agility by throwing three big marbles at him, Indiana Jones style, and
go through a massive maze, which looked fun.
And nobody had ever done it before for some reason, even though there's countless bullfighters down there.
If they didn't need
but
to.
But we also saw how those bullfighters died. They basically just stood in front of a bull and let it run over them. So there's that too. Yeah. Which leads me to wonder, it's like when he gets to the ultimate challenge of all the bulls that your family ever faced, considering that they basically just became a brick wall for a bull, how did they defeat so many bulls?
Did they defeat any though? I thought they just became relevant
the bulls that they defeated. It's like hundreds of them. Remember, because they turn into mega bull. You know,
I was going to say Voltron, but you know,
they could have had a couple years, good years, and then one day just got too cocky, stood there, and got gored.
Well, just the reason why I bring up Power Rangers is not just because we had mega bull, but also Ice Cube at the beginning, he goes full Zardon. Manolo. In fact, I want to say that was the voice of Zardon that was like, "You will do this challenge. You will do this challenge." Didn't it sound like Zardon just a little bit, just a tiny little bit? We're not talking about Bryan Cranston Zardon. We're talking about the '90s TV Zardon.
TV Zardon. I didn't quite notice, but
yeah, I didn't notice. Yeah.
All right. I guess that shows my age just a little bit. All right. So, while all of this is happening, we do have the B plot, which is basically that now that Manolo is dead because of Zabuba's trick, Maria is about to marry Joaquin out of responsibility and duty to her family, while the Bandit King is coming for the medal.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
All right. What do y'all think about the fact that Manolo is only really interested in Maria, and you know he's not really a warrior. We show that he's not a fighter. You know, he's basically just the emo kid with the guitar trying to woo the girl, right? And yet we're supposed to be excited about him coming to save the town from the bandits when we have a warrior who apparently loses his crap if he doesn't have his medal. Right.
I was surprised he didn't sing another song to the Bandit King, you know. So that would have made more sense. You know? He sang this whole fucking time, and then he's going to whip out his fucking fist at the end. All right, cool.
not just that, but he evokes the power of all the bullfighters to fight the Bandit King. Because, you know, bullfighters are great warriors.
The Bandit King's one weakness, sorts, I guess. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think they're seen as skilled, cunning fighters, even though, you know, you're just fighting a bull. But at the same time, they do have to have agility, and, you know, that dexterity bonus comes in handy. So
okay, but the thing is that Maria's dad is a general, and he obviously, if he's a general, that means he has soldiers. Not just Channing Tatum, but, you know, all of the soldiers.
Well... I get the feeling he's retired, so he doesn't have those soldiers with him.
Yeah, but those soldiers would still be around, whether he's retired or not, right? I mean, they still have an active military, but it seems like they put all of their hopes and dreams on one soldier, and the soldiers seem to be doing awesome things even without the medal. You would think that, well, if he doesn't have the medal, he'll still go and fight, right? He would think he would at least give it a good shot, but no, he turns into kind of a bitch.
He's a gamer who's used to playing with cheat modes on, and all of a sudden all his cheat modes get shut off. Yeah, he literally has God mode.
Oh God!
Yeah.
But no, I mean it's like seriously, what? How do they make such? And again, I understand that this is a children's tale that's being said here, is presented in a children's way, but these are the things that you're thinking about when you're watching this movie with a critical perspective.
I don't think you intended to watch this with a critical perspective, though. A lot of it does, the plot dissolves.
But at the same time, though, the thing is if you put the same type of criticism towards the Princess Bride, that too falls apart. I mean, a lot of movies, especially if you look at it from a fairy tale perspective, hell, if you go through, you know, Hans Christian Andersen or the Brothers Grimm and their stories with a critical perspective, they fall apart too. I mean, Hansel and Gretel, probably not for the best. Anyway, but
Well, remember there's an adage that fairy tales don't exist to tell us that dragons exist, because we know dragons exist. They tell us the dragons can be defeated. That's what they're there for.
Yeah. And who else has a problem with the fact that when the going gets tough, the Bandit King, this big badass, all of a sudden decides, you know what, fuck it, I'm killing myself. And I'm taking all of you with me. That's a little bitch move. I mean, he would probably have been arrested. I doubt that they would have executed him because, you know, who's going to execute him?
They might.
I don't even know if they have the weapons to do it, considering that he basically just sorted off all of their attacks. You know, I seriously doubt. I mean, he's basically just going to be defeated. It wasn't like he was going to be murdered, but yeah, he decides to go full on Allah Akbar in this situation.
Stop
bringing all the hate.
You could still decapitate him, and that should end him. And even if it doesn't kill him, you just put his head up somewhere so he can bitch you out all day long.
Yeah.
You can't kill me! You don't have a body, so tough.
All right. But, I guess, so, what do we think about the finale? About the fact that once the day is saved and the villain vanquished and that the hero survived, because the hero is going to sacrifice himself, and we're talking about Manolo here.
Yeah.
He's the one who's going to sacrifice himself to protect the village, right? Now I think that what the story is trying to do is it was trying to set up the fact that he was selfless in regards to killing the bull. You know, that he stuck with his principles and he got the hate from the village for saving the bull. He was, and again, I get the sense that he would probably spared Chabo. So the fact that he was willing to sacrifice himself, that he was going to be selfless again into the village, that would show the village that he was strong, even if he doesn't do what would have been conceived as the best thing for the village, right?
Right.
Or deal the fatal blow. But to me, I feel like it should have been Joaquin that learned selflessness, right? Because he's the one who's selfish the entire time.
Kind of learns to be humble while he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, they cheat a little bit because he's the one who gives the thing to Manolo so that he survives the bomb blast.
The metal.
The metal. And... But is that really selfless? I mean, unless we're taking into account that basically he's going to just expect Maria to marry him even after Chavo's dead, right? Because technically speaking, that was his leverage. It's like, you marry me, and I'll make sure that you don't have to worry about this Bandit King. If the Bandit King is dead, there's no real leverage, and we know that she's not into him romantically. So... does he have anything really to lose in this, other than you know, the competition?
His mustache?
It's something to think about.
Yeah,
honestly, that should have been the thing that he lost instead of an eye. Mm-hmm. He should have lost his mustache because he made such a big deal out of his mustache the entire time. He that should have been the thing that he sacrificed. At least the mustache.
He could have shaved it off for their wedding. Instead, you know, that would have been nice.
Yeah. All of Mexico.
Yeah. You must keep the mustache.
No. You have to understand the mustache is his Solomon thing. You know, you shave the stash and all of his muscle just disappears. Huh. Not only does he keep his stash, but Mexico grows a huge one all of a sudden.
I thought it had one at the beginning.
I don't think so, but if I'm wrong, feel free to let me know. I've been schooled before, and I will be schooled again.
I thought when they zoomed in, there was one, but okay. Mm-hmm. We must stop Shua question. Okay.
But has the film earned Maria marrying Manolo and the dance party that occurs afterwards with more Mumford and Sons? Because you know, in Mexico, if you have to have yourself a party, you gotta have some Mumford.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's the banjo.
Oh, well, there's no banjo in
this version. Yeah, true. But actually, using the guitar to replace it, it works. So.
I mean, I like the cover. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Very interesting choice.
Okay.
But did Manolo and Maria earn their happy ending? Or the happy ending that the movie gives them, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, he did the Herculean trials, all right.
But is she really a prize to win? I mean, considering the fact that the movie...
That's the thing, yeah.
She's a fickle bitch, man. The movie sets it up. She sucks. I'm sorry,
Oh, no, she fights along with him. She grabs a sword and, you know...
She conveniently knows all this shit randomly, like right when it's convenient, and never mentions it beforehand.
That's what they teach you at the nunnery. I can actually see a Spanish nunnery of the era teaching fencing. Yeah, I can see kung fu. I cannot see being taught, but that could also be a reflection on the kids in the current day being told the story.
Oh.
It's like, she could have learned some sort of martial art. They're not restricted to just the Orient. There are fighting styles for hand-to-hand fighting, but... Mm-hmm. Kung Fu is just kind of a good joke to throw out there.
So she doesn't really do Kung Fu. She does more parkour. And a little history here. There's a part of Mexico, or part of Spain, that was under Muslim control. And if you know anything about the Prince of Persia, is that parkour was a part of Muslim culture.
Yeah.
So the fact that she went to Spain, yeah, she would definitely know parkour. And that was sarcasm if you don't know what I'm saying. Yes.
Oh.
Just saying. Anyway, so we get to the ending and we find out that Christina Applegate was actually El Muerto all along. What do you take of that? Do you take that this was really a true story, or this is just thrown in there as kind of like a Shyamalan twist at the end?
If it's a true story, then she's invested in keeping their memories alive of everyone in that story, which also, ironically, would be the bandits.
That is true. I didn't even think about that.
That's awesome.
Like, well, maybe the only way that we could talk about keep the bands alive is if we also talk about these other people. So it's like,
yeah,
I wasn't trying to save their lives. I was trying to save the lives of the bandits.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have any families. There wasn't anyone waiting for them. No one was going to get their pensions when their corpses were brought back after this failed siege. You know, just saying.
Yeah.
All right. So, we've had a little bit of fun with this movie. Is there anything specific that we want to talk about before we get into Geek Sheet?
Oh!
I don't think so.
Alright. So, Kent, why don't you start us down the long, long road of Geek Sheet. On this one?
You know, this is just a pick and choose Geek Sheet, so...
I'll fill in
some extra gaps, because, you know, we got Diego Luna right off the bat. You know him from Rogue One. You know him from actually quite a few producer credits that he's got. He's pretty much almost got more credits as a producer than an actor for Spanish language stuff.
Well, that's only because he was a big deal with a little movie from another guy that we've talked about before, Alfonso Cuarón. He did Y Tu Mama También, which was his big breakout. And yeah.
Yeah, we got Zoe Saldana, who, you know, we've already had her in a movie on here.
Mm-hmm.
She we know her from Star Trek Reboot, Guardians of the Galaxy, but she was in, like, one scene in Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Mm-hmm. So...
Oh, and you want to know a little bit of trivia?
Oh, yes.
You see, Diego Luna and Zoe Saldana had actually worked earlier, about 10 years ago, before this movie, in a movie called The Terminal with Tom Hanks, where Diego Luna was wooing Zoe Saldana.
Ooh.
And they actually got married in that movie. Spoilers.
For the spoilers, movie, yeah. Anyway. Okay, so this is like Star Wars, Star Trek crossing over, and yeah, okay. So.
And we have a little G.I. Joe.
Yeah, Channing Tatum, Duke. We already mentioned Ron, every odd character we love, and lots of cool stuff. Perlman, Hellboy, Beauty and the Beast TV series, Pacific Rim. Yeah, we brought up Uncle Machete earlier with Danny DeVito. I wanted to bring up, I can never pronounce his name, Carlos tongue-tied,
You mean Alice Rocky?
Yes, that one. Or General Posada, who, you know, Reno 911 and the original Taco Bell Chihuahua. He wanted that Taco Bell. But he's done thousands of voice acting jobs. Grandma was Gray DeLisso, who you should follow on Twitter completely. And has done, like, voice acting in, like, everything in the past 10, 15, 20 years. So... Mm-hmm. We got, well, I stopped at Cheech Marin, because all I did was click on his IMDb, and I got a contact high.
Well, we talked about him before, too, The Lion King.
Yeah, I mean, you get, yeah, you just click on that, and, oh, all those Cheech movies, so, Cheech and Chong stuff. But go on, I know you have a few of your own you want to toss in there.
I'm only going to bring up one because we are running late on time. Okay. But, you know, this is our first opera singer that we have on Art House Legends. Placido Domingo, who played Jorge, who was the singing bullfighter. Which of course, anyone who knows anything about opera knows that he is one of the great tenors of the stage. And yes, he does do a few bars, and it is pretty awesome. So yeah, so we do have that too. There's one more. We also have a stand-up comedian that I absolutely love, Gabriel Iglesias, who played Pepe. You might know him as the Fluffy One. And Magic Mike. Just, he's awesome in both the Magic Mike movies, so just check that out. Which, of course, also have Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
So, there we go. All right, so I know that everyone's excited about this one. Kent, Chris, do you agree with the critics on The Book of Life? Do you give it a pass? Do you give it a fail? Or do you give it a maybe? Chris?
I did enjoy it. I did enjoy the movie a bit more than when I saw it the first time, but I dislike about half the movie. So, I mean, I do love the visuals of The Land of the Remembered, and it's about it, really. it's a maybe for me, I guess. Yeah. So.
Aww.
Yeah.
All right. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. What about you, Kent?
Well, as looking at it non-critically, as a good movie for kids and kid at hearts and anyone even remotely interested in the culture, it's a pass. So I liked it. So yeah, I mean, not sure what the problem is, but yeah, it's okay. And I like those covers.
Okay, so I have to say right now, yeah, there is, the movie definitely has an influence in Shrek. There's some influences in other animated films. Obviously, The Princess Bride, I think, played a large part in this movie. Critically speaking, it has a lot of problems. But at the same time, though, is it fun? Is it heartwarming to an extent? Does it have its heart in the right place? And I honestly believe that it does. It makes a lot of mistakes. Lots of mistakes. And if you're not someone that can admire the flaws in a movie and still enjoy the movie despite the flaws, then I would not recommend this movie because it will annoy you in that sense. And it does play on lots of tropes. But at the same time, it's also honoring, kind of an ageless storytelling. And... to me, you kind of have to have those tropes. If you're going to talk about lore, especially if you're looking at lore from other cultures, that doesn't excuse the problems that this movie has. But at the same time, though, I just really enjoy it. It's not one of those you have to absolutely turn off your head to enjoy. It's not that kind of brainless, but it doesn't hurt to kind of turn off that stuff. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun. So it's... Do I think that the critics may have given it a little bit more applause than it should, or at least didn't bring up a lot of the flaws in the movie? A lot of critics did kind of bring up those flaws, but not to the extent I think, and perhaps maybe I was a little bit more nicer to the movie than I should have been when I made it part of my top 20 films of, I think, 2014.
Oh.
It was in the top 20, not top 10, top 20, but part of me just thinks that it's, you know, it had a lot of fun. It enjoyed itself. It knew what it was, and I also just admire a filmmaker who, this is not Pixar, this is not DreamWorks, this is a small independent studio that did this movie, and you know, and had the backing of Guillermo del Toro. That, you know, he was the one that was spearheading this and making sure they got the funding. I admire that, and for what that is, I think that's great. So I give it a pass, you know, warts and all. And I honestly think that it should be seen, and that you should give it a shot. And if you don't like it, I definitely understand. But honestly, though, there's so much charm here and so much fun. I have to give it that pass. But now the time has come for us to move past Art House of Horror and Halloween, and move closer towards the end of the year. And we have a lot of great movies that we're going to be talking about this late fall, early winter. But what is the first one that we're dealing with, Kent?
Well, we are going to head down to New Zealand, as promised, and go hunt for the Wilder People right away.
We're going to be talking about Sam Neill again.
Yeah, and a certain director of great... unique movies, and is very well known as a New Zealand director, so who has a big movie coming out soon.
Who may or may not have a big movie coming out as well.
Yes.
A big Marvel movie.
Marvelous movie, yes.
But at this point, is there anything else that we want to bring up before we close the show?
Isn't Coco going to be the same movie?
No.
No.
Or at least that's not what it's looking like.
With a dog?
Although... hey, that dog looks awesome.
The dog looks awesome. Sorry. I'll give it that. But it looks very similar.
We'll see. And we might have to have that conversation. So...
Yeah. And just dawned on me, Zabalbo is basically a trickster god. He is the stereotypical trickster, except he's got a crappy job.
You mean like Loki? Mm.
I was thinking more Coyote or...
The Mask?
Yeah.
Alright.
Because Loki's got other aspects besides just trickster, so... I was trying to think of, my mind blanked on other tricksters, but...
And if you have anything to say about this episode or any of our prior episodes, feel free to hit us up on Art House Legends Facebook page or the Art House Legends Twitter at Art House Legends, or you can send us a quiet little email, arthouselegends@gmail.com. Also, feel free to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Let's spread the love out a little bit, get our show a little bit more attention so we can get more guests and put out more shows for you. And gentlemen, I thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Any last words?
Guess not. Well, right. Remember your ancestors and tell your kids stories about them.
And stay away from the frosted churros. Ugh.
Yes, definitely that part. Okay.
All right. Well, this is the Movie Dude Eric.
This is Kent.
And this is Chris.
And Fee.
Please leave us a positive review on iTunes.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
Legends Podcast is not affiliated with any other entity. The opinions stated in this podcast are strictly personal and do not represent the view of its sponsor or any other person or entity. No infringement is intended.